consider yourself a home dreamer? One who watches the renovation programs on television? Are you just waiting for the right time to build or renovate your dream home? Welcome to Winning the Dream Home Race with Steve Clipp Architect. Steve has spent 3 decades learning how to win at the dream home game. He has insights into the psychology of space that could strengthen your marriage and soothe your soul. He has an understanding of market forces and the methodologies of construction that could save you thousands of dollars. And he could make you a winner. Now, here's Steve Clipp.
Hi, people. Welcome back. The question today is, are there any deals left? And if so, how can you tell a hidden gem from, you know, simply an ugly lump of coal? It's January 4th, 2013. The real estate recession started back in 2007 and is now more than 5 years old. Officially, the recession, the overall recession, ended in the first quarter of 2009. Officially, we've been in recovery ever since then, and typically by now, the market, the overall market, our economy, would be roaring, and it isn't. There are reasons why this recovery has been so weak compared to past recoveries, and you know, one of the areas of largest question is real estate. Probably the truth is that if we've been allowed to really go through the real estate recession, dump the bad product, dump the oversupply, and get past it, the real estate market today would be much stronger than it is. And when you talk about real estate, it's actually, real estate is always local. So depending upon where you are, we could be 3 years past the recession, three years into rising prices. Or if you're in Las Vegas, you know, the bottom could be right now. It all depends on supply and demand. I looked at a few markets. Like in South Florida, they had a horrible drop in the real estate market. And a lot of people came, a lot of money came in from overseas and bought up the supply. Now that market is in decent shape. Now supply and demand are somewhat more in balance. Same thing could be said of Phoenix. Phoenix market has risen substantially, is one of the fastest rising markets right now. Where I live in the Raleigh-Durham area, we never had that bad of a fall. And things really dropped about 15% from my idealized high. And now I think that's over. Now we may even be back to where we were in 2007. Or maybe we're not at an idealized high, but the bargains are pretty much gone. And especially when you look at places like Washington, D.C., you know, the one business that has boomed in the last 4 years is government. And so Washington, D.C. was the first place to recover. And, you know, you can't find deals there right now. Also, there are too many people chasing those deals. Manhattan was another one. If you were looking for an apartment or a condo in Manhattan 4 years ago, you could find some real bargains. Well, of course, the financial industry recovered quickly, and those disappeared. Right now, they're building a $90 million penthouse apartment in Manhattan. In fact, if you looked at the pictures of the crane that fell during Hurricane Sandy, that crane was sitting on top of the high-rise building with the $90 million penthouse apartment at the top. So, anyway, all real estate is local, and you have to look at your real estate, your area. Well, I've been reading a lot. I get all of the, you know, the newsletters and data from the construction firms and from in the housing industry. And everything I'm reading right now is predicting a reversal in the residential real estate market. It's been a buyer's market for 5 years, and that's very quickly going to turn around. In some areas, it's already a seller's market, or at least it's balanced. If you think about it, you know, I've talked over and over again about how real estate is, it's an investment. And on a basic level, it functions the same way as any other investment, which means that its value is dependent upon supply and demand. If for the last 5 years, we've been building very few houses. If you think of 1 million units, 1 million new housing starts as being a baseline, that every year 1 million new houses have to be built in this country to keep up with demand. It's the same way, by the way, that every year 1 million new jobs have to be created in this country just to keep up with the new people entering the workforce. Well, for the last 4 or 5 years, we've been building about 300,000 to 400,000 new houses. So the 5 years before that, or the 4 years before that, from 2003 to 2007, instead of the baseline 1 million houses a year, we were doing 1.5 million housing starts a year. Clearly, if you're building 50% more houses than the normal, at some point supply is going to exceed demand, prices are going to drop because there's too much supply. Now we have the reverse. If we've been building 300,000, 400,000 new houses a year instead of 1 million, then we're going to have too few houses and too much demand. Prices are going to rise. Next year, and it's interesting that conceptually you can say, oh, well, if we build up all this extra supply and then we didn't build some for a while, well, we're just making up for it. The other thing that happened is that there are housing units that went out of circulation during that time. And ones that were torn down or abandoned. And a lot of people who were at the lower end of the houses, disappeared. So as we temporarily contracted and constricted, we got rid of the bad product. Okay, and again, I'll use another analogy. The automobile market is expected to do great next year because our cars are old. We went through 5 years where we bought less cars than the normal. Our cars got old, and so now we have to buy new ones. Now they're going out of circulation. Hurricane Sandy got rid of hundreds of thousands of cars. Those are out of circulation. It's all supply and demand. Here's the other thing. This year, other things are happening in the housing market. Told you there's going to be a shortage of new very good shape houses to buy. There's that shortage. And for someone who wants a new home, you know, we've got a shortage of that. We've got more homes that are 5-10 years old. Someone wants new, they're going to pay a premium for it. The other thing is, in the coming year, we're going to have shortages of materials. The materials that, you know, this is just like, what I'm really saying is, wake up, people. You've got probably, if you don't get started this spring, you're going to pay a higher price. What's happened is in the materials market, all of the suppliers, the manufacturers of sheetrock and, you know, and 2x4 studs and all of the other things that go into a house, they have ramped down production. They are building no more of these things than what is needed by current demand. And by doing so, they can charge full price for the materials. So there are no bargains in materials today. There's also predicted we had a couple of million people, million construction workers, out of work and leave the market, disappear. If you're down in South Florida, for instance, it's predicted that aside from the couple hundred thousand legal construction workers, that there were as many as 600,000 illegal construction workers who have disappeared. What that means is that, strange as it is, with a real unemployment rate of, you know, more than 10% in this country, strange as it is, there's a shortage of skilled construction workers. And when you go to, you know, when you go and talk to the contract about building your house, well, he's going to have a problem because there's more demand for his services. There's more demand for his construction, skilled construction laborers than he has people. He has two choices. He can ramp back up. He can hire people who he doesn't know, and or he can take his skilled team that he's consolidated and protected for the last couple of years and do the most work they can do with that team, but at a premium price. So he can ramp up so he can give, you know, do work at a regular price, or he can hold on to his consolidated team and charge a premium for them. Given how many contractors have been burned in the last few years, how many have wisened up, they're more likely to try to keep their small crews and get a premium price for the work. So you've got, you know, okay. What I'm saying is that construction is going to be more expensive. They're expecting, realistically, they're expecting greatly rising housing prices in the next year. And as hard as it is, but everything comes to an end. Everything, you know, these are cycles. And the idea that the cycle that started 5 years ago is going to continue forever doesn't work. It's going to change. It already has changed. Already, we're in a different cycle. We're in a different place. So, okay, the question is, are there any deals left to be had? Well, not like the last few years. And when I come back from break, I'm going to talk about two houses that I looked at that go to the question of, are there any deals? And what the issue is, you have to be able to tell what is a deal and what is selling for a bargain price because it's a bad house. It's a tough thing to do, but it's the difference between making money and not. Here's a question I had. Someone wrote to me that there's actually a shadow supply. There are a couple of million houses in this country that are in trouble right now. In, you know, under normal circumstances, there are a couple million houses that would have been foreclosed upon. But between the lenders, the mortgage holders, and the government has been working for a couple of years to hold down the foreclosures and to push them back. Which is, it's like picking the scab of a wound instead of allowing it to heal. It just stays a scab and stays wounded. But the question is, okay, if there really are a couple million houses out there that are should have been foreclosed upon and are not going to recover, isn't that going to continue to drag down the market? Well, the answer is, if you're in Las Vegas, it is. All markets are local. If you're in my market, all of those shadow houses are being cleaned out. And they're almost gone now because the market is strong enough that the lenders would go in there and force the sale of the houses. They did it when they would get 25 cents on the dollar. But if they think they can get 75 cents on the dollar, which they can in the half the markets in this country now, they're cleaning those up and pushing them out. And so if you keep hearing about, you know, all the people in trouble, there aren't that many people in trouble now in good markets. There are still in some bad markets. And, you know, you have to figure out which one yours is. As I said, right after the break, I'm going to get off all of this generalized stuff and give you a couple of examples of houses I've looked at recently. And are they good examples? Are they just diamonds in the rough? Or are they, you know, horrible things that you should run screaming from? When we come back from break.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk. Yeah! If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a single parent trying to create the balance between home life and work life? You may be running a successful business, but how are your relationships with your family and children? If you're one of the thousands of people trying to juggle it all, tune in to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood, hosted by Chris Efesiu. Chris is the portrait of the success story. Coming to the U.S. with no language skills, founding and growing several businesses while raising his daughter from age 7 to adulthood as a single dad. Listen every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
Ever wondered what private investigators really do and how they go about solving cases? Each week, PI's Declassified gives a glimpse into this little-known world. Join your host, Francie Kaler, a noted private investigator, in conversations with detectives and experts in the field. False confessions, forensic evidence, finding missing persons, exposing fraud, exonerating the innocent. All areas that Francie and her guests will cover. And have they got stories to tell? Tune in and call in to the live show Thursdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on Voice America Variety.
Listen for Trust Across America every week on the Voice America Variety Channel. Tune in as host Jordan Kimmel is joined by national experts in the fields of accounting, finance, organizational behavior, and sustainability, as well as companies that are applying strategies that are enabling them to be recognized as doing the right thing by the American Trust Awards. Your host, Jordan Kimmel, is himself a trusted professional with years of experience in applying strategies and consulting with today's leading firms. Trust Across America is heard Wednesdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned into Winning the Dream Home Race with your host, Steve Klipp. We'd love to hear from you about our program. Call in to 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to clipark@yahoo.com. That's C-L-I-P-P-A-R-C-H at yahoo.com. Now, back to winning the dream home race.
Okay. I've looked at a couple of houses recently that on the surface would seem like a great deal. And I'm a little bit cautious, but let me tell you about one of them. This is a house. It's in a country club neighborhood that the basic, it's in foreclosure. Which surprisingly, even in country club neighborhoods, even in high end neighborhoods, there's a percentage of houses that are in foreclosure. People at all income levels get in trouble, and people at all income levels have things not work out the way they'd like them to or they expected them to. Well, this house, the baseline in the neighborhood is any house in the neighborhood is going to sell in the $650,000 to $700,000 range. There are houses that are $2 million plus. But to buy into the neighborhood, you really expect to spend $650,000, $700,000. In this case, this house is selling for $450,000. So it's selling right off the bat. They've got it on the market for, you know, two-thirds of what I think of as the baseline price for a house in the neighborhood. Interestingly, houses on the golf course, people are paying $700,000 for them and tearing them down for the lot. If a house is not on the golf course, no, that doesn't happen. But still, this one is $450,000. And what is strange about it is that the house is on the corner lot and it has a really good presence. I mean, for always, people have driven by the house and said, you know, innately, I like that house. It sets up well. It looks good from the street. And it's selling at two-thirds of the baseline price for a house in the neighborhood. Well, I looked at it, and you know, immediately my thoughts are, okay, if they put it on the market at that price, then they must, the real estate people, the bank, must know something I don't. And so I looked at it, and there are a couple of issues with it. The first one is that, well, the issue is on three different levels. When you look at the lot is in a floodplain, and the house has been raised up, so it's up above flood level for the living levels. And theoretically, it's on the golf course. I had one set of clients look at it and think that, oh, wow, this is a golf course front lot. It is theoretically, technically, but you really can't see the golf course from the house. You really don't get a good view of it. So, it's, you know, whether to say, oh, tear the house down, it's $450,000 for a golf course front lot. Frankly, that would be a bargain. Two issues. First one is that, well, it doesn't have that good of visibility on the golf course. Kind of sits at the end of a hole, not looking down the fairway, but just looking at the end of the green. And too far back and low to even see that. The other thing is that this sits in the floodplain. And if you leveled the house, if you removed it for the lot, you couldn't build back. So it's like, okay, look closely at things. Look for hidden zingers. Now, you can't build back, but you can build on the existing foundation. So you could take it down to the foundation and build a new house, or you could renovate the existing house. Those are the options. But they limit, and they limit the value. The other issue is that reportedly there's a mold issue in the house. Mold issues are, this is one thing about finding the house that you think is a great deal. Mold can completely destroy the value of a house. In this case, because we're sitting on the floodplain, we know that there are water issues. We know the basement can get water in it, and we know that there's mold in the basement. I really didn't get into it to see how much it crept up into the house. The mold issue. How do you resolve a mold issue? You block, figure out how to stop the moisture from getting in, figure out how to get the moisture that's in the house out of the house, and further basically, you strip it. You strip everything in the house, all of the sheetrock, all of the insulation. You take it down to the studs and rebuild it. So in that case, if we're talking about a house with mold issues, then we're talking about a shell of a house. That can affect the price or the value. Now, the other thing is that this house is, the typical house in the neighborhood is 3,500 square feet. Many of the houses, you know, I can name several 8,000 square foot houses in the neighborhood and a lot in the 5,000 square foot range. This house was built early on and it's only 2,500 square feet. So when you look at the baseline for the neighborhood, the baseline is, as I said, a $650,000, $700,000 house. That's for a 3,500 square foot house. This one's only 2,500 square feet. So perhaps it should sell for less. And if you take the lot, any lot in the neighborhood, not on the golf course, has a value of $200,000. Then, well, if it's an empty lot, maybe more, but say $200,000 for the lot. And then, you know, what is the value of the house that's on the lot? And that can range between $100 a square foot and $250 a square foot. Here's the thing. Not only is this house small, but it's 30 years old. and it's never been renovated. So everything inside the house is 30 years old. A kitchen is completely gone at that time. Bathrooms are completely gone at that time, meaning they have no residual value. This is, forget the mold issue. Even if you don't have that, now you found out that instead of being the baseline house, livable 3,500 square foot house, this is a house that needs total renovation and it's 2,500 square feet. So, okay, we're evaluating this house as, is this a deal or not? Should I go into it? Well, a lot of people don't want, you know, what's the possible outcome? Say you buy it for $450,000. And you gut it down to the studs, take out all the interior finishes, except probably the hardwood floors. Hardwood floors can be refinished. But you take out everything, all the insulation, all the sheetrock. You put in a new kitchen. You put in a new bathrooms. You upgrade things to current times. Now, your wiring is fine. You don't have to rewire the house. Your plumbing is fine. You don't have to replumb the house. So the question is, you know, so frankly, to redo that 2,500 square feet, you're probably going to spend $200,000 to $250,000. Say you spend the $250,000. You do everything well. You do everything up to the standard of the neighborhood, but you don't foolishly spend money. You know, you don't put a Sub-Zero refrigerator in there. You can. You're not going to get it back. But, and you don't put the Woof stove in there. You know, if you do those, you do them for your own pleasure. But you do everything up to the level of the community. And you spend $450 on the house, $250 to renovate it. So now you're at $700,000. Question is, it's still a 2,500 square foot house. So small for the neighborhood. It has really good street presence. I mean, this is a good looking house. It's actually much better looking than the reality once you get in it. But you fixed that. So you've got a house that's $700,000. It's right in line with the bottom. It's right in line with the bottom of the neighborhood. It is very saleable for that $700,000. It is possibly very saleable for $800,000. In which case, you got a good deal. You got in there and you got, and let's say it is, genuinely, it's a good saleable house for $800,000. You paid $700,000 for it. You got a deal. I mean, this is a winner for you if you're buying the house to live in. If you're buying the house to flip, then it's more borderline. It took a lot of money to get in it. It took a lot of money to fix it up. You still have to include a real estate commission. So if you're buying the house to flip and sell it for $800,000, then you probably made $70,000 on it. So you spent $700,000, paid the real estate commission, and ended up with a profit of $70,000, or 10% of your overall effort. As a flipper, that's not a great deal. that's really, as a flipper, you want to make 15 to 20% on a deal or feel that's what you can make before you go into it. As a homeowner, that's a good deal. This house works. It is a deal. It is a bargain. What is wrong with it, you figured out how to fix. And the biggest one of those is what is wrong with the, the question mark is the mold. If you can deal with the water issues and feel you've got a handle on that, if you can deal with the mold, how do you stop the mold from growing before you fix everything else? If you can deal with that, this is a great house. Deal, bargain, you win. And that's one, you know, immediate that I know of. So looked at that house. Great, super, that's a deal. And that's what I'm finding now in strong markets. And the Chapel Hill market right now is a strong market. The lenders are putting these foreclosure houses that they've held off foreclosing, or the government has made them hold off. They're now coming on the market. And, you know, the question is whether they're a deal or not. Let me tell you about another one that I looked at. This one is in another high-end country club neighborhood. And it sits on top of a hill. It sits on one of the highest elevations in the area. The house has a great location. It's got an incredible view that I would pay more for than I would for, you know, to be on a golf course. I'm sitting on a golf course. I have an expansive golf course view from my house, from my office right now. But I'd rather have this incredible 30-mile hilltop view. So this house has that. Terrific. And it's in foreclosure. It was. Someone bought it out of foreclosure thinking, what a bargain. What a fantastic house. And the house is $900,000 tax value. Bought it in foreclosure for $500,000. And these numbers aren't real accurate, but they're for illustration purposes. So he bought it for less than 60 cents on the dollar, theoretically, and thinking there's nothing wrong with this house. It's only 10 years old. It is big. The main level is 2,400 square feet. There's 2,400 square feet upstairs, if not more, because upstairs includes over the garage. There's a lower level with another 1,500 square feet. So this is an over 6,000 square foot house with a stunning view, 10 years old, and he bought it for $500,000. That sounds like an incredible deal. And in many ways, it is. Obviously, there's an except to this. Except, they've been trying to sell this house for years. They've been trying to sell this house since 2007. And the price has dropped and the price has dropped. And at $650,000, it didn't sell. Started off at just under $1 million. Dropped over the years to $650,000, still didn't sell. Must be something wrong with it. Must be some reason this stunning view, this huge house, relatively new, doesn't sell. So, going to go to break. And come back, I'll tell you what makes a sow's ear out of this silk purse.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Do the adventures of Indiana Jones leave you curious about this exotic and unusual profession? If so, don't miss Indiana Jones, Myth, Reality, and 21st Century Archaeology with Dr. Joseph Schuldenrein. You'll learn about forensics, ancient civilizations, and human origins. Listen to Dr. Schuldenrein and colleagues discuss their excavations and related archaeological topics, ranging from the unique to the sublime, and yes, even the mundane. Indiana Jones, Myth, Reality, and 21st Century Archaeology, live Wednesday, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific Time, on Voice America Variety.
Tune into Around the World in a Glass, presented by Sportsman's. We're a show all about wine, spirits, and other beverages. Your host, Kimber Stonehouse, is a professional expert and wine enthusiast. Each week, we'll focus on a different region of the world, discuss wines and other beverages, talk about some of the top restaurants in the region, and what to pair with which wine. Just listening could make you almost an expert. Around the World in a Glass is heard live every Wednesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned into Winning the Dream Home Race with your host, Steve Klipp. We'd love to hear from you about our program. Call in to 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to clipark@yahoo.com. That's clipark@yahoo.com. Now, back to winning the dream home race.
So what was wrong with it? Why is it this house that, not on paper even, in person looking at it, what is steel for $500,000? What's wrong with it? What's interesting, this is a prime example of a house built by a builder for spec with a residential designer as designing it. And the answer is that while everything was there, nothing in the house felt right. It's a house with a stunning view, but the main room of the house, the living room, didn't really focus on that view. The kitchen did. The kitchen was in the right place to focus on the view. But like I say, it was the kitchen, and the kitchen was cut off from anything else except the, a breakfast area. Family room was separated from it. So you didn't have any big spaces, and you didn't have anything focused on the view. This is a quote-unquote million-dollar house, and all the ceilings were flat at 9 feet. They, in order to put more bedrooms upstairs, pump up the square footage of the house. Remember, this house is already 6 or 7,000 square feet. Well, they put more bedrooms upstairs instead of giving volume to any of the rooms on the main level. And it meant that the living room, or great room, it's hard to call it either it really wasn't a good fit for either of those descriptions, was only 9 feet tall. And, as I say, didn't focus on the view. The master bedroom had only a 9-foot ceiling because they felt the need to add another bedroom above it, even though they had 6 or 7 bedrooms in the house. The master bedroom was blah, boring, and just as bad, the master bath was blah, boring. Big, all the space, a really nice closet, boring as can be. And again, not focused on this incredible view. Anytime you build a house, maximize the value of the lot. Maximize your setting. And that holds true even if your setting is very normal. When your setting is fantastic and you don't design to maximize it, you're throwing away money. In this sense, this house threw away money. Everything was blah. Everything was dull. And everything was awkward and didn't flow. So what's the answer? You still got a 6,000 square foot house with a stunning view on a golf course community for $500,000. And it should have been $1 million. Well, the answer is you explode it. Meaning you go in there, assume nothing has to stay, and put everything back in better shape. You pick out the middle of the house with the fantastic view, and you make that into a fantastic space. You take out the room above. You don't need that bedroom. You don't need, you know, you've got 5 other bedrooms. So you take out the bedroom above, you make that middle of the house with the fantastic view, a fantastic space. 2 stories tall, really a wow. If you're going to spend $1 million, you have to have a wow. You take the pieces of the kitchen. You've got a kitchen that's 10 years old. All of the pieces in there are still good. You take the pieces of the kitchen out of that middle space that you're making into the wow, and you put them adjacent to that into a new kitchen, functions the same, and is connected to the great room. So you've got what I've talked about, romancing the home, this central living space that everyone gathers around. That kitchen, too, has a fantastic view, and it has a connection to the great room. And it costs you very little money because all your pieces are new, well, 10 years old. Every box in that kitchen of those kitchen cabinets can be put back. Every appliance can be put back. You're probably buying new countertops. So rip out the kitchen, put it back in a different place. Cost you $25,000. May cost you $20,000 to do that. Continue on back to the master bedroom. Everything in, and again, do the same thing. You don't need that bedroom above it. You don't need the square footage up there. So, again, rip out the ceiling. Don't raise the master bedroom up 2 stories. Raise it up to 12 feet. Give it an interesting ceiling. Open up a stunning wall of windows to the view. You're high above the street, so it's not as if anyone can look in to your master bedroom, but you can look out 30 miles. Go into the master bath. It's got all the pieces. You don't have to redo plumbing. Redo pizzazz. Well, actually, I would rearrange things because again, everything was done clumsy. Everything was done awkward. Everything was done by a draftsman who's simply drawing boxes instead of understanding space. Understand, this was a custom, well, it's a spec home, but built as a custom. And because of just mediocrity of design, sold for $500,000 instead of $900,000. There are times and circumstances that compound. When you've got good times, you can sometimes, a bad house can still sell decently. When you have bad times, when there is a buyer's market, a bad house suffers. A bad house is passed over for another one and plummets in price. This was a house that had all the pieces poorly put together. And like I say, it was $500,000 instead of $900,000. And even at $500,000, the guy who bought it out of foreclosure couldn't turn around and flip it to somebody else. There weren't buyers for it. So, however, if you do what I'm talking about, I looked at the house and said, okay, again, you put $200,000 into it. You have to have the courage to understand what is flawed and how to fix it. And accept the fact that even though it's only 10 years old, even though all the pieces are there, it is fundamentally flawed, fundamentally bad, and needs to be fixed. And the fix is $200,000. Again, do the math. If you can buy it for $500,000, or even buy it from this guy who bought it in foreclosure for $550,000, if you can buy it, say, for $550,000, put $200,000 into it, and get it reworked into something that is much more dramatic, much flows much better, lives much better, you now have $750,000 in the house. And it now may be worth the $900,000 that it theoretically is on paper. That's a winner. That's a winner, but it takes the money and the courage to do so. If I were looking to flip it, that's right on the cusp of what is worthwhile to flip. That's right on the cusp, I could see realizing a 15% return, flipping it. I couldn't see, but if it's a house to live in, you got yourself a $900,000 house for $750,000. If you do nothing, if you buy the house, say it's 10 years old, it doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel comfortable. However, it's all there and it's only 10 years old. It's almost brand new. I'm not going to touch anything. Then when you go to sell it, you're going to have the same problem that the last two sellers did. That it is fundamentally flawed and that people are not going to overlook the fundamental flaws. Okay, so that was another, real example of whether you can find it. The real question is, today, can you get a deal? And the answer in most markets is that it is really tough today to find a deal. You can still find it, especially buying things out of foreclosure, or people who are still distressed. But you have to look closely. Every one of those houses, if they sold, every one of those houses, if they didn't have a flaw, they would be selling right now for what they're worth. Every house sells for what it's worth. And the house that is a bargain has a flaw. The greatest flaw you can find is a flaw in procedure. A flaw where they set the price too high to begin with and the house became stale. And now they dropped the price. A flaw where they timed the market wrong and tried to put the house on during the dead season. It became stale and now they dropped the price. A flaw where they didn't, you know, paint rooms or they didn't do the little fix-ups and it didn't sell, became stale, they dropped the price. If you can find procedure flaws, they're the cheapest and easiest to fix. Please come back and listen next week and please send me emails. If you have questions, send them to me and I'll address them on the show. And specifically answer what you're thinking and what your issues are. Thank you.
Thanks again for listening to Winning the Dream Home Race. Please join your host, Steve Klipp, again next Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll help you come one step closer to building or renovating your dream home.